So Judges 10, 6 through 12, 15. In verses 6 through 9, we're going to see again this cycle we've been running across. We're going to see that Israel again apostatized. And because of that, God sold them into the hands of the Philistines and the sons of Ammon. And they were afflicted and crushed, the verse says, for 18 years. And then in 10 through 16, God rebukes them for their reliance on these other gods. And he even tells them to cry out to these gods that they're serving and let those gods deliver them from their distress. And we'll talk some more about that. Then we have 10:17 all the way through 12:7. It talks about Jephthah, the Gileadite, and he delivers Israel from the sons of Ammon, and it says that he judges for 6 years. And in that section, there's kind of some little midsections, or subsections, if you would. 11:30 through 40 talks about Jephthah's vow, so we're going to be talking about that. And then in 12:1 through 7, it's Ephraim's jealousy and defeat. And then when you get into 12:8, it talks about Ibzan judges Israel. And then 11 through 12 talks about Elon. And then 13 through 15 of chapter 12 talks about Abdon. So that is the breakdown of these chapters. And we will start in chapter 10, verse 6. 10, verse 6 of Judges. So according to verse 6, kind of already spoiled it, what did the sons of Israel do again? Okay, they did evil in the sight of the Lord, or again did evil. So, if you have your little chart, we can fill out on section 5. Section 5 is going to cover the chapters that we're looking at tonight, so keep your little chart out if you haven't already filled it out. And as we go through some of those parts, I might just mention that's for your chart, and then we can fill that out as well. So, 10:6, it said, then the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, serving all these other gods, or other people's gods, we'll see here, we'll read the verse, and thus they forsook or abandoned the Lord and did not serve him. So that is talking about our sin section. So, on 5 of your chart, under sin, you could put chapter 10, 6. I put, again, did evil, served the Baals and the Ashtaroth and the gods. I didn't put all the different other gods. You can if you think there's enough space on there. And then that they forgot the Lord. So in verse 6, it says, then the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, served the Baals and the Asheroth and the gods of Aram, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the sons of Ammon, and the gods of the Philistines. A lot of different gods they were serving here that it was brought up. And then thus they forsook the Lord and did not serve him, did not serve the God of heaven. Because of this, what did the Lord do? What did this cause in the Lord? Something we've seen before in these other chapters that we've looked at. Okay, anger. Anger. 7 says, and anger of the Lord burned against Israel. And because of this anger, he sold them. He sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the sons of Ammon. And verse 8 tells us that they were afflicted and crushed. And that they afflicted and crushed the sons of Israel for 18 years. So this, and it also said, well, we'll read verse 9 in a second, but this can be under your suffering part of your chart. We can put chapter 10, 7 through 9, as far as their suffering. You can put that they were sold into the hands of the Philistines and the sons of Ammon, and also afflicted and crushed 18 years. Remember, we've been noting the amount of years of their suffering as well. So they suffered for 18 years. Verse 9 also tells us some more about the sons of Ammon. It said that they crossed the Jordan to fight also against Judah, Benjamin, and the house of Ephraim, so that Israel was greatly distressed. So Israel was greatly distressed by the sons of Ammon. And then you have in verse 10, Israel, as they've done in the past, they cried out to the Lord. So you can put that under your supplication. I put 10 through 16 because we'll read some more. We'll see some more where it's brought up that they cried out to the Lord. So that's the idea of supplication. I posed a question on the lesson. It says, what do the sons of Israel confess to doing in 10b? It says, saying, what did they say in 10b?
They said, we've sinned against God.
Okay. We've sinned against thee, for indeed we have forsaken our God and served the Baals. So, yeah, they admitted this. And the Lord talks about what he has done in verses 11 and 12. It says, and the Lord said to the sons of Israel, did I not deliver you from the Egyptians, from the Amorites, from the sons of Ammon and the Philistines, also when the Sidonians and the Amalekites and the Maonites oppressed you, you cried out to me and I delivered you from their hands. So the Lord's going over what he's done in response to when they've cried out. And then 13, what does the Lord state in verse 13? He tells them something. Okay. That's right. He after he talks about what he has done for them, then he says, yet you have forsaken me and served other gods. So kind of like he's had enough. Therefore, I will deliver you no more. So he tells them he's not going to deliver them anymore. And that's verse 13. And then 14's interesting. We kind of said something about it when we were doing the breakdown of our chapters. But what does the Lord tell them in verse 14? Right, these gods you've been serving, why are you crying to me? Go let them fix it. That's right. Yeah, so he tells them to go and cry to them, the gods that they had chosen, and let these other gods deliver them in their time of distress. But I also pose the question, does he, meaning God, does God think these other gods can do that? No. He knows they can't. He knows they can't, but Israel was putting their trust in these other gods and serving and honoring these other gods. And the Lord was making a point. And even Israel knew that these other gods could not do that. And that's why they responded the way that they did in verse 15. So they ask again in verse 15. It says, and the sons of Israel said to the Lord, we have sinned. Do to us whatever seems good to thee, only please deliver us this day. So they ask once again for deliverance. And verse 16 says that they put away the foreign gods from among them and they served the Lord. What do you call that? Okay. So they repented. They had a change of their will, and they showed it in their action. It said, so they put away the foreign gods from among them and served the Lord, and He could bear their misery, or could bear the misery of Israel no longer. Excuse me. So that's where we get to our idea on our chart of salvation. 10:16, He, the Lord, could bear the misery of Israel no longer. And we'll see in 11:32, the deliverer that He sends, that'll be Jephthah. And that He's going to judge for 6 years, so you can mark that on your chart. He'll judge for 6 years. So, we see here in 16 that God had changed His mind, if you will, from what He had stated in verse 13. When He said, I'm going to deliver you no more. But now because of this and them putting away these other gods and serving Him, He's going to send them a deliverer. In 10:17, it says, Then the sons of Ammon were summoned, and they camped in Gilead. And the sons of Israel gathered together and camped in Mizpah. So in 10:18, what were the people and the leaders, what were they trying to figure out in 18? Okay. Yeah, so they needed a leader, right? Said, who is the man that will begin to fight against the son of Ammon? He shall become head over all the inhabitants of Gilead. So then we start learning about Jephthah in chapter 11. So now we're in chapter 11. We're going to learn about Jephthah. 11:1 tells us that he was a valiant warrior. So he was a valiant warrior. But why did his brothers drive him away? Why didn't they want him to be a part of them?
He was the son of Harlan.
Okay. So it says in verse 1, Now Jephthah, the Gileadite, was a valiant warrior, but he was the son of a harlot, and Gilead was the father of Jephthah. And Gilead's wife bore him sons. And when his wife's sons grew up, they drove Jephthah out and said to him, You shall not have an inheritance in our father's house, for you are the son of another woman. So Jephthah fled from his brothers and lived in the land of Tob. So that is why he fled. And then verse 4, it says, It came about after a while that the sons of Ammon fought against Israel. And it happened when the sons of Ammon fought against Israel that the elders of Gilead went to get Jephthah from the land of Tob. And they said to Jephthah, Come and be our chief, that we may fight against the sons of Ammon. And then in verses 7 through 11, it's kind of a back and forth between Jephthah and the elders of Gilead, and they want him to lead them, but he has questions why they dealt with him the way they did. Verse 7, Then Jephthah said to the elders of Gilead, Did you not hate me and drive me from my father's house? So why have you come to me now when you are in trouble? And the elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, For this reason we have now returned to you, that you may go with us and fight with the sons of Ammon and become head over all the inhabitants of Gilead. So Jephthah said to the elders of Gilead, If you take me back to fight against the sons of Ammon, and the Lord gives them up to me, will I become your head? The elders of Gilead said to Jephthah, the Lord is witness between us. Surely we will do as you have said. Then Jephthah went with the elders of Gilead, and the people made him head and chief over them. And Jephthah spoke all his words before the Lord in Mizpah. So, as their leader, then Jephthah sends a message to the sons of Ammon in verse 12. Now Jephthah sent messengers to the king of the sons of Ammon, saying, what is between you and me, that you have come to me to fight against my land? And the king of the sons of Ammon replied in verse 13, and they said to the messengers of Jephthah, because Israel took away my land when they came up from Egypt, from the Arnon as far as the Jabbok and the Jordan, therefore return them peaceably now. So now you're going to have this back and forth going on all the way up through about verse 26. And then Jephthah responds in 27. It says, I therefore have not sinned against you, but you are doing me wrong by making war against me. May the Lord, the judge, judge today between the sons of Israel and the sons of Ammon. And they too had a response. But the king of the sons of Ammon disregarded the message which Jephthah sent him. So they disregarded that message. So in verse 30, we're going to talk about what you've been waiting for. Jephthah's vow. So I'm going to tell you from the start. I have some thoughts on this, and I'll share those with you, but you're going to have to read and make your own decision on this. But verses 30 through 40 talk about this vow. So what does Jephthah vow? What does he say? What is this vow that he makes, this rash vow that they... Okay. So, let's look at 30 and 31. And that's correct. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, if thou wilt indeed give the sons of Ammon into my hand, then it shall be whatever comes out the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the sons of Ammon, it shall be the Lord's. And I will offer it up as a burnt offering. So, then we see that the Lord gives them success. 32 says, Jephthah crossed over to the sons of Ammon to fight against them, and the Lord gave them into his hand. And he struck them with a very great slaughter from Aroer to the entrance of Minnith, 20 cities as far as Abel-Kiramim. So the sons of Ammon were subdued before the sons of Israel. So, we see, I pose the question, what ended up falling under the vow, what came out of his house to meet him? So that was his daughter. His daughter came out there, so because verse 34 said, when Jephthah came to his house at Mizpah, behold, his daughter was coming out to meet him with tambourines and with dancing. Now she was his one and only child. Besides her, he had neither son nor daughter. So if you didn't get it the first time that she was the only child, it gives a little more detail. You know, it says, besides her, he had no son nor daughter. So this is his only child, and that's what came out the door. So, since it was her, he changed his mind, right? No? I don't think that's what he had in mind, but no, he didn't change his mind. Let's look at Numbers 30 for a second. Numbers 30, verse 2. It says, if a man makes a vow to the Lord or takes an oath to bind himself with a binding obligation, he shall not violate his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. So he can't take it back. And if we look at verse 35 of chapter 11, it says, and it came about when he saw her that he tore his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low, and you are among those who trouble me. For I have given my word to the Lord, and I cannot take it back. So that's exactly what he says. He can't take it back. But consider this girl. Consider his daughter. You know, when we see verse 36, I'm not sure what her age is. But think of her dedication by the way she answers. She said to her father, my father, you have given your word to the Lord. Do to me as you have said, since the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the sons of Ammon. So she recognized what the Lord had done based on what Jephthah vowed. And we'll say a little bit more about that, about what he vowed as well, because we're going to look at some things of how the Lord views some things. And I think that'll help us have a little better understanding of what's going on here as well. Now, in verse 37 and 38, she does ask one thing of her father. It says, and she said to her father, let this thing be done for me. Let me alone 2 months, that I may go to the mountains and weep because of my virginity, I and my companions. Then he said, go. So he sent her away for 2 months, and she left with her companions, and they wept on the mountains because of her virginity. So it brings up twice why she's weeping. And that's something we have to think about. Verse 39, her return, and it came about after 2 months that she returned to her father. And then 39b says that he did to her according to the vow that he had made. So, I pose the question, what does that mean? So, does this mean Jephthah offered her up as a human sacrifice? Is that what we're thinking? Or if we consider the law of harmony, what we can view from other verses, we know that it can't mean that. So, with God being all-knowing, he knew what would come out of the house. Wouldn't he know that? So when Jephthah makes this vow, God all-knowing knows what's going to come out of this house. Would he bless him with victory in view of such a vow if it was going to be a human sacrifice, if that's what we're thinking is going on here? So if it really meant that he would offer a human sacrifice, consider how the Lord feels about human sacrifices. So let's look in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 12, verses 30 and 31. So talking about some of the idolatry. It says, beware that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods, that I also may do likewise? You shall not behave thus towards the Lord your God, for every abominable act. We're going to think of that thought. Every abominable act which the Lord hates, they have done for their gods, for They even burn their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. So that is viewed as an abominable act. So they even do this. You know, it's so bad. They even burn their sons and daughters in the fire. And then if you go into chapter 18 of Deuteronomy, we'll look at verse 10. It says, "There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire. One who uses divination, one who practices witchcraft, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer." So this is not to be something that they are to do. I know some of the versions say, make his son or daughters pass through the fire. So if you're not sure of what that means, some other versions say it differently. ESV says, burns his son or daughters as an offering. So they're not to offer their children. And there's also some characteristics of worshiping Molech we could look at in Leviticus. Leviticus 18:21 says, "Neither shall you give any of your offspring to offer them to Molech, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." So you're not to sacrifice your offspring. And then in verse 20, I'm not saying verse, chapter 20, sorry. Chapter 20 of Leviticus. We'll start in verse 2. Talking again about child sacrifice. It says, "You shall also say to the sons of Israel, any man from the sons of Israel or from the aliens sojourning in Israel who gives any of his offspring to Molech shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. I will also set my face against that man, and I will cut him off from among his people, because he has given some of his offspring to Molech, so as to defile my sanctuary and to profane my holy name. If the people of the land, however, should ever disregard that man when he gives any of his offspring to Molech, so as not to put him to death, then I myself will set my face against that man and against his family, and I will cut off from among their people both him and all those who play the harlot after him by playing the harlot after Molech." So these are examples of some of the characteristics that were being done for Molech, but we still see this idea of this human sacrifice or sacrificing these kids was not acceptable. So that's something we need to consider. If we see that and we know that God's all-knowing, he knew what was going to come out the doors when Jephthah made this vow, and he agreed and he allowed Jephthah success, would he do that if he knew the outcome was going to be a child sacrifice? So if we're thinking that, that's we've got to consider that wouldn't make sense. So, and another thing that's brought up, we can go back to Judges chapter 11. Judges chapter 11. Also note something that was brought up after the statement. Okay, her virginity was brought up after the statement. Why is that? What's the importance of this? Why is this being brought up about her virginity? So talking about Jephthah, verse 39, it says that he did to her according to the vow he had made. And it stated that she had no relationships with a man, or no relations with a man. So what is the importance of stating this now? Why is it important to state this now? Verses 37 through 38, when she was talking to her father about going away for 2 months so that she could weep. You know, it said that she was weeping because of her virginity. So why is that? Is she weeping because she knows that she's going to be a sacrifice and she's going to die a virgin? Is that why she's weeping? Or is she weeping because she knows that she has to live and remain a virgin? So that's something for us to consider. Consider this with Jephthah. It said in 35 that he was brought low. He states this to his daughter. Yes, he was brought low. He tore his clothes. But I don't think it's because he was going to have to sacrifice her, not in the sense that some are thinking of sacrifice. Not in the physical sense of a human sacrifice or a burnt offering. But he was sacrificing something. It stated twice. She was his only child who would remain a virgin. So could he have torn his clothes and been brought down low because he knows this is the end. That's the end of his family line. Okay, he's got this one daughter. That's it. Could it be that? So she's to remain a virgin. And said she had no relations with a man. And that he did according to the vow which he means. So is that explaining some of what's going on? Could it be that this was not a physical burnt offering, but you want to consider it in a spiritual sense, the idea of being devoted, wholly devoted to God? Remember in Samuel, let's go to 1 Samuel. We do have instances where we've seen things like that. Remember, Samuel was dedicated to God. We read in 1 Samuel that Hannah had no children. And then in verse 11, it states, she made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, a vow. O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thy maidservant and remember me, and not forget thy maidservant, but will give thy maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come on his head. And then if you go over to verse 24, down to 24, well, 24 just kind of describes this offering that she does. And then in verse 28 is actually where it says, so I have also dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is dedicated to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. And in the next chapter, chapter 2, you look at verse 11, talks about some of what he's doing. It says, then Elkanah went to his home with Ramah, but the boy ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest. And then 18 through 20 also said, now Samuel was ministering before the Lord as a boy was wearing a linen ephod, and his mother would make him a little robe and bring it to him from year to year, when she would come up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. So we do see other instances where a child has been dedicated. So could that be the idea here? No, is it a wholly devoted to God? Is that what's being talked about Jephthah's daughter. The sacrifice, because we have to remember some of the things that it keeps bringing up. Why would her virginity be important if you're just going to make her a burnt offering? As far as her weeping about it. So those are some things for us to consider about that. As I mentioned before, sometimes I look at different versions. And I find it interesting, some of the things I found in another version. It's you might be familiar with it or you might not. It's called Young's Literal Translation. I've brought it up before. And it's interesting how this version says some things. In 11:31, let me go back to Judges. Judges 11:31. When it's talking about whatever comes out the door and what Jephthah's going to do about it, it says, in the YLT, it says, "Then it hath been that which at all cometh out from the doors of my house to meet me in my turning back in peace from Beni-Ammon, it hath been to Jehovah, or I have offered up for it a burnt offering." It's just a little different take on some of the words. But you do see how it does emphasize first that it shall be the Lord's, but then it words it a little different about this burnt offering. It says, or I have offered up for it a burnt offering. And in verse 40, well, let's look at 39. Let's look at 39 first. So 39b talks about this custom. Okay, we'll read all of 39. It says, "It came about at the end of the 2 months that she returned to her father, who did to her according to the vow which he had made. And she had no relations with a man. Thus, it became a custom in Israel." So, question is, what is the custom? Now, verse 40 of the NASB that I'm reading says that the daughters of Israel went yearly to commemorate the daughter of Jephthah, the Gileadite, 4 days in the year. So they're going somewhere and they're commemorating for 4 days about the daughter of Jephthah. And just something to consider, like I said, this YLT, it says it a little different. Doesn't mean it just causes us to think about some things. It says, "Then it hath been that which at all cometh out from the doors of my house to meet me in my turning back in peace from Beni-Ammon, it hath been to Jehovah, or I have offered up for it." That is not the verse I'm looking for. We already read that one. Okay. 40, that's what I want. Sorry about that. Okay, so talking about this custom, it says in the YLT, "From time to time, the daughters of Israel go to talk to the daughter of Jephthah, the Gileadite, 4 days in the year." Now, this is YLT, Young's Literal Translation. And, of course, the other versions say it different. It's just something to consider, because I don't know exactly what this custom was. But in this one, it says that by the way of commemorating, they go and talk to the daughter of Jephthah. So you mean she wasn't burned up? So these are just things for us to consider. This makes us consider the idea that she's still alive.
King James says that they lamented.
Okay.
Yearly to lament the daughter of Jephthah.
Okay. But it doesn't say where they go.
No.
Okay. Yeah, and a lot of the versions do say it similar to that, that they lamented or they go yearly to commemorate. So that is what you see in a lot of the versions. So I will say that. I'm just throwing something out there for us to consider. So in chapter 12.
Before you move on.
Yes, sir.
Suggestion.
Yes, sir.
Verse 39. It says, "And Joseph did with her according to the vow she had vowed, and she knew no man." That's the way the New American Standard, that's the way the King James renders it. That's the way the New King James renders it, although it puts a period instead of a semicolon. And that's where the American Standard, all of them have the word "and." The ESV eliminates it. They just took it out. Here's the point. The word "and" sometimes is not one and two, but it explains what happened. For example, in Matthew chapter 21 and verse 5, it says that Jesus is coming to you mounted on a donkey, and it translates it in the New American Standard, "even on a colt." King James says, "upon an ass and a colt." That's the way the New King James does it. It's the simple little word "and." Was Jesus riding two animals, one and two? No. "And" here is used to explain what kind of a donkey, a colt. All right. Now, when you go back to our text here in Judges 11, if that's the way the word is used in that particular verse, it tells you very clearly what his vow was. That is, he did what he had vowed, even, or namely, she had no relation with the man.
Okay, perverse.
He's explaining it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Any other thoughts or comments? Those are good. Good comments. Yes, sir, Rocky.
In verse 31, it says, "It shall be that whatever," when you think about the word "whatever," you say that's an absolute. Many times in the Bible, absolutes are really not truly absolutes. Sometimes absolutes are conditional. Do you approve this case that this "whatever" is conditional? Because you've been to the verses that God doesn't allow people to sacrifice.
Right.
So something always to keep in mind is that when you read absolutes in the Bible,
okay. Thank you, Rocky. Any other comments? I think we're about to get buzzed. How long do I have, Neil? 1 minute. Okay, we can do it. Okay, so in chapter 12, 1 through 7, basically talks about Ephraim's jealousy and defeat. Then you have 12, 8 through 10. We're going to... 12, 8 through 15 talks about three other judges. Ibzan, the of Bethlehem, judges Israel 7 years. And then in verses 11 through 12, Elon the Zebulite judged Israel 10 years. And then 13 through 15, Abdon the Pirathonite judged Israel 8 years. And I'm done. So we made it through that one. I haven't handed anything out yet. I will get some. I'll put some more stuff out during our meeting. So read chapters 13 through 16. Let's read Judges 13 through 16, talking about Samson. That's what our next lesson is going to be about. We don't have class on Sunday. Our next class together will be on the following Wednesday because of our meeting. Thank you for your good comments.